Let's get it over with before we lose control and ruin everything. She sounds steely and passionate and scared. But it kills me that it's not the Dukes she seems afraid of. Her fear seems to be that I am going to ruin our opportunity to take them by surprise. Why did this have to happen so fast? We haven't had enough time. My thoughts are punctured by the feel of Anna's hand on me. Down there. Jackpot. I look down and she's pulling my mobile from my pocket, holding it out to me. Damn. Major false alarm. That was brave, I tell her, but she doesn't smile. She remains completely serious and I don't like it one bit. It's time, she whispers. No. She's still holding out the phone and I feel dizzy as I take it. She goes up on her toes and kisses my cheek, staying there so close. I love you, Kai. Let's bring them down, you and me and the others, together. We'll use the element of surprise while we have it. It's our time. Her words ping through me, and her desperation, her optimism, seep into the cracks of my heart just enough to make me momentarily feel what she feels, hope. This is our chance, our only chance. Eventually, the Dukes will learn about each of us disloyal Neff, and we can spend our lives running in fear, but they will find us and pick us off one by one. This, right now, is the best chance we possibly have to get rid of them and live a life here on Earth without them. Anna's eyes plead with me to support her, and I want to. I do. I nod and stare down at my phone, then pull up Father's new number. I think about nothing except that sliver of hope. My throat nearly collapses when I hear his new voice answer. Father! Oh God, what have I done? I look at Anna and she nods. I open my mouth and can hardly believe when the next words tumble out. I've got her! The second I say it, all of the hope abandons me. You're kidding me! He whoops loudly and laughs like a damn hyena. Oh God. Oh God. She's cuffed, I say stupidly, feeling like I have to say something. Did you find the sword? My heart is racing. No, sir. I searched her belongings but found nothing. Shit! She must have hidden it somewhere. Doesn't matter. We'll get her to tell us. He sounds so bloody carefree and sure of himself. There's no way in hell I'm handing Anna over. No way. Nice job, Kaiden, he says. You accomplished what over 500 prowling legionnaires couldn't do last night. Yeah, blah, blah. Why is he being so bloody chatty? I need to get Anna out of here. They searched damn near every bar, club and hotel on the East Coast. Where the hell'd you find her? In the back of my car on Lover's Lane, you git. My mind flips through things to say. She had a group of mates in her old town who always partied at a lake house. I thought perhaps she'd fall back on them, and I was right. Okay then, enough chit-chat. I glance at the door, itching. Father laughs again like we're best mates sharing jokes. Where are you now? Our old house. Shite, I should have lied. Excellent. I'll call an emergency summit in Vegas and we can take care of her. It's our most secure location and we're always looking for an excuse to visit Sin City, right? Weren't they just there? Awkward pause. Oh right, I'm supposed to answer. I force out a laugh and roll my eyes. Are we done here yet? All right, he says. Meet me at the Atlanta airport in 2 hours. What? I whip my face to Anna and her eyes are like saucers. It's not necessary for you to fly down here, Father, I insist. I'll book our flights and deliver her to the summit. Oh, it's definitely necessary. I want to be the one to escort her into the summit tonight. See you at the jet. I will throat punch him. We'll be there, I lie. I press end and check the screen to be sure we've disconnected. Right, done. I turn to Anna. We're not going. Carden? She pumps her bound fists against her thigh in frustration. How could she still want to do this? It's madness. I launch my vile phone at the bed and cram my fingers into my hair. What have I done? I pace the room as Anna fumbles through her bag and starts texting people. No. It's not happening. We can still run. She has to see reason. Anna, stop. She advances on me with the most severe stern look I've ever seen from her, and she yells in a strong voice. No more. Get it out of your head, Kai. We're not running. This is happening, whether you like it or not. It's time to get your game face on and get ready to kick some ass. Holy... I honestly didn't think her capable of this kind of verbal badassery. Even in handcuffs, she's taken control, walloped me, and forced my whiny inner child into a corner. I'm sorry I made her yell, but I think I needed to hear that. I needed to hear her say she's not going to put up with my fears anymore. Anna is the one who was chosen, and for good reason. My only job is to be at her side and trust her judgment, though it kills me. I look down and nod. You're right. Ready or not, it's time. Chapter 38. Anna's Vice. Trash the hotel, let's get drunk on the minibar. Fancy by Iggy Azalea. That was the bloody worst plane ride of my life. Fucking Farzuff. I nearly handed Anna the hilt so she could strike his ass down when he felt her up from behind, supposedly looking for the sword, then tried to get me to shag the flight attendant. I'm really regretting not getting rid of him when we had the chance, but his disappearance would have thrown off the summit and sent everyone scrambling. I still have my doubts about how this prophecy will play out, but I'm getting right chipper at the idea of watching his demise. I walk beside Anna down a lavishly carpeted hall in Vegas's Venetian Resort. I haven't taken my extended hearing off Father, and I think for once Anna is actually listening as well. Her face is pinched, and I've had to grab her elbow to keep her from bumping into fire hydrants and maid carts. We stop in one of the hotel's many shops to buy Anna an outfit for tonight, per Father's orders. I'm certain he was expecting something nightclub-worthy, like a cocktail dress. I can't wait to see his face when he gets a look at what she's chosen. We've just turned into our hall when Father knocks on a hotel room door two floors up. I recognise Duke Astroth's poncy English voice straight away. Brother Farzuff, didn't I just see you on the slopes in Switzerland? Father laughs. Yes, well, this summit's going to be much more enjoyable. Let me in. It's not completely unusual for Father to seek the Duke of Adultery's company, but usually it's to work, not talk. I don't like this at all. Do you have the sword? Astroth asks when they're in the room. They lower their voices and I strain to hear. No, she's hidden it. That's not why I'm here. I need a favor. It will only take a moment. I'm curious about a possible bond between two people, though there's probably nothing there. I've just got a nagging feeling, and I want to rule it out. Bile burns its way up my throat. Ah, Astaroth croons. A possible conquest. Father responds to him in Russian, a language he knows I don't speak. I stop dead in my tracks. This is about us. He's suspicious of a bond between me and Anna. Astaroth will see it, the love, the marriage, all of it. I think we both realize this at the same time because we take off down the hall as quickly and quietly as we can manage. One of us needs to drink, now. I burst through the doors of our suite, through the bedroom, down the steps and straight to the mini fridge. I can't ask Anna to drink, it's not right, but I'm not sure she's comfortable keeping an ear on Father and Astaroth. So I use a hand to sign, one of us has to stay sober to listen. She immediately points to me, so I give her cinnamon liqueur. She downs it with barely a cringe, blowing out a stream of cinnamon air. Father and Astaroth are climbing on the elevator now, flirting with a random woman. I hope like hell they'll be distracted by her. I hand Anna the orange liqueur and she frowns as she swallows. I wonder if she's feeling it yet. She looks normal. She taps her wrist and I hold up three fingers, then make a zero, 30 seconds. The Dukes are not distracted enough by the woman and are now heading down our hall. I try to give her the amaretto next, but she shakes her head hard and reaches over me for the tequila. She throws it back with a smack, and for a split second, I forget who we are and who's after us because, hot damn, I love when she is hardcore. Then my stomach flips with remembrance, and Anna holds out her hand, shaking it with impatience. I thrust the vodka into her hand, and she downs it, smacking the carpet with a slight grimace. Yeah, that didn't go down as pleasantly as the tequila. She holds out her hand again, but she's already had four big shots. Are you sure? I sign. It will be terrible for her to get too drunk, but she still looks okay. She nods fast and I hand her the rum, both impressed and frightened by her high tolerance. She drinks the last one like it's nothing. Father and Astaroth are nearly at our door. They've stopped chatting and I can only hear their footsteps on the thick carpet. Please, let this work. Anna and I move to stand at the same time and she tips to the side before catching herself and sitting on the floor. Then she giggles and my heart sinks to my feet. Oh, shit. She stares over at the minibar and I slash a hand across my throat, cut off. She frowns. She better not even think about having another. Damn it, she has to keep her wits about her when the Dukes get here. I brush my hair back roughly with my fingers, so much for high tolerance. The Dukes are right outside the door, silent. I look at Anna and put a finger to my lips. I don't want her to say a word. A knock fills the room. Anna stares back at me, kind of glossy, and I think I might have just ruined the entire operation. As I jump to my feet, I realise that in this state she won't even be able to use the hilt that's hiding in her bag. I should have been the one to drink. I grind my teeth together, furious with myself, and pull the door open. Father! Duke Astaroth! I tilt my head as if I'm curious about their visit. What can I do for you? Young dickhead flicks his hand to the side. Let us in and close the door. Astaroth just wants to have a look at her. I step aside and close the door when they pass. Then I walk to the sitting area behind them, straining my neck for a look at Anna. She's sitting in front of the mini-fridge just as I left her, looking like a lush. She stares up at Astaroth, the Fabio of the Dukes, as he sneers down at her. This one's piss drunk, says Astaroth. I can't get a reading. My heart gives a giant throb of reprieve. But the show is not over. He will be suspicious if I don't react somehow. A reading on what? I ask. A bond? You can't be serious. He ignores me. Suddenly Anna stands, or tries to stand, and takes a stumbling set of sidesteps into the couch. She bursts into laughter, unable to fully stand, and I think I might die. You don't waste any time, Father says. Ugh, no, don't talk to her. Go away. Go away. There's more. Anna flings an arm behind her to point at the fridge. I didn't drink it all. Want some? Shy Anna, shut up. I'll pass, Father says. He's got an impish grin on his face. But I think you should have another. No, you giant knob, she should not. Damn, how long until this begins to burn off her? I feel like we've been standing here forever. Anna drops to the floor in front of the fridge, her shorts riding up her thighs and showing a sliver of bum crack. Father most definitely notices, making a lewd gesture, and I want to take him down. Astaroth gets bored and leaves. I'm so itchy a hive of bees covers my skin. It is killing me to stand here. I move to the entertainment centre, mere feet from where Anna crouches, and I lean against it, crossing my arms. They need more tequila in these minibar fridge thingamajigs, Anna says. She sits up with a bottle in her hand and I nearly dropkick it from her fingers. Father looks at me with absolute mirth. I told you, I spit. She's a lush, an idiot. I can't believe you think there was a bond between us. Please, Anna, do not say anything. Stay quiet. Tear through the sweets in the fridge. Pass out. Do anything except drink or talk. You can't really blame me for wondering when you wouldn't even screw the stewardess today. You're usually all about cougars. Shite. Ew, Anna squeals, stuffing her hands over her ears. See, I mutter, completely immature. She twists open the bottle of gin and I can't keep my mouth shut. You're trashed. You don't need any more. Oh, shut up, she says. I dart forward, but she pulls the bottle to her chest and throws back a sip, wagging her other pointer finger in the air. Where are my handcuffs? No touchy the drinky. That's bad, bad, bad. Why are you being so grumpy anyways? We're in Vegas, baby. She stands awkwardly, grabbing the fridge and laughing. She jumps and puts her arms up, splashing a bit of gin. I would probably be laughing my arse off if this were any other time, but now? Not amused. Any moment is going to be wearing off. Any moment now would be brilliant. Until then, I must try to talk some sense into her. Father is watching with far too much interest. You're being obnoxious, I tell her. It's bad enough I have to babysit. I'm not holding your bloody hair if you puke. She laughs and saunters towards me, wobbly, poking my chest. It's funny to annoy you. You're like so hot when you get mad. Father moves into our space, sandwiching Anna between us and putting his mouth to her ear. I'd watch it if I were you. He can get pretty rough when he's upset. I'm about to get rough with him if he doesn't take his bleeding hand off our waist. I have a sick, awful feeling that Father would not be above the idea of trying to punish her before the summit in his own wicked ways. Anna spins and pushes off our chests, moving to the middle of the room and looking around, bleary-eyed. Where's the music? Father, who does not like being pushed away, is now staring at her with menace. He moves to her and grabs her arms, shaking her. Where's the sword?
I ain't got no sword, crazy ass, she says in a heavy drawl.
She thinks he's being cheeky. Don't talk to him like that, I say, moving toward them. I couldn't care less that she's disrespected him, but I don't want her to make him angry. Father chuckles without humour.
We'll see, little girl.
Yeah, we will.
She smiles, then flops down on the couch and gets a goofy look.
What the heck are we even talking about? I thought we were going to dance.
She rolls off the couch and crawls toward the minibar. Father claps a hand on my shoulder and cocks his head toward Anna. The stare he gives her is full of loathing.
Yeah, good luck with that.
And be careful, I wouldn't put it past her to use your lust inclination as a distraction to escape. Don't let her get the upper hand, you know what I'm saying? He winks wickedly and I nod. Don't leave the room and don't let her out of your sight. Yes, sir.
Just leave.
He puts his mouth too close to my ear and whispers,
She thinks she's cute. She thinks she can pull one over on you. Don't trust her. Don't even get near her if you can help it.
I give a tight nod. Anna loudly cracks open a bottle of beer and I give her my harshest glare. She flicks the cap at me and I smack it away. Shame to waste such a fine body on her, he murmurs to me. I grit my teeth. Father pokes fun at the drunk girl a bit longer, amused by her cluelessness, and then he finally leaves. I flick him off with both hands when the door closes, bloody glad he's gone and that things didn't escalate further. We're unbelievably lucky. I lean back against the entertainment center and cross my arms. Now I just have to get Anna sobered up and... Why is she staring at me like that? She licks her lips and gives me the classic come-hither look. But that would be bad, very bad right now. I shake my head. My hearing is out the door and Farzoff whistles as he enters the elevator. Anna sets down her beer and stands. She's still obviously inebriated, but she's not falling over anymore. She's just slow-eyed and sexy, and I have to keep shaking my head. But she's come in my way, and I feel the stirring. My head fills with fog, and my gut aches with a deep throb. Anna presses her entire body to mine, and her hands are on my waist. My teeth clamp together. I grasp her shoulders and push her away as gently and quietly as I can, but she's unrelenting. I shake my head, feeling weakened by the emotion of the afternoon. Father is off the elevator now, walking, saying hello to people, flirting with strangers. Anna's hands roam over my chest and down. I grab her hands, but she yanks them away and says, Don't!
Ugh, little vixen, do not do this to me. Don't touch, don't speak, just...
I cover her mouth.
Shut up, I say in a low voice.
She goes still. Her eyes are on me, and they are sweltering, her lids dipping low. Come to think of it, I should probably cover her eyes too. I should put her to bed and tuck her in tightly, all by herself, fully clothed, until she's ready to behave again. Sounds of the casino ring out in my extended hearing.
You look familiar, I hear Father say. Are you an actress?
A feminine giggle.
Nope.
Come on, with a face like that.
Anna gently peels my hand from her mouth. She kisses my palm, and it's so simple and sensual that I'm suddenly fighting for normal breath.
I'll buy you a drink, Father says smoothly.
Anna kisses her way up my middle finger. I step back, but she's still holding my hand and she runs her tongue across my fingertip. Ah, damn it, I whisper, yanking my hand away. She's killing me. She's going to kill us. Please. She pulls her hair tie out, releasing her blonde hair about her shoulders. Those eyes still melting into me, begging me. It is nearly too much. My ears fill with laughter from Father and the woman downstairs. I have no idea if he's listening. He seems fully focused on his prey, but I don't trust him. He clearly warned me against Anna. I will tie you up again if you don't behave, I warn Anna. Her eyes narrow wickedly. Oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you? Anna Witt just got sassy with me. And that is my breaking point. The beast is alive. Warnings be damned. I grab her waist and turn her, pressing her back into the entertainment center so that I have leverage to press hard against her. The entire thing clatters madly. Her arms and hands are everywhere, clinging, digging, pulling. I kiss her hard, wanting to own all of her. Every alcohol-laced breath of air that escapes her mouth, I want it all. We grope as we move to the couch. Multiple footsteps are moving quickly down the hall. I'm on top of her, between her legs, realizing I should have ripped those shorts off before getting her this far. But I can't stop moving. Her body feels so good against mine. Her kisses and moans a delicacy.
Sounds like the daughter of Belial is drunk again, comes Blake's voice down the hall.
Shocker, snaps Ginger. We're about to have company, I say, devouring the soft skin at her neck. I push my hand up her shirt, feeling her silky skin, and let my thumb rub under her bra. She gasps and undulates beneath me. Banging echoes through the room. Oi! Ginger shouts. Open the damn door! I'm busy! I nip Anna's bottom lip. The other neph can lay off.
The more the merrier, Blake says.
I look at Anna and she shakes her head. Her eyes are still heavily lidded. Just ignore them. She grabs the bottom of my shirt and pulls it up, forcing me up, and she kisses a path across my pecs. Oh, yes. I smash her into the couch with another blazing kiss.
Don't let that skank take advantage of you when you're bored, son of Farzuff.
Anna tries to push her way up, shouting,
Who are you calling a skank, you...
Oh, hell. I quickly cover her mouth and she struggles to get free. I wish they'd just bloody go away. Just one more time together before this godforsaken night begins. I can make it seem like an act of sheer lust.
Open up.
Capano's voice is like a solid thing that rolls into the room and stares at us. I reel back and jump to my feet. Anna is still lying there, as if waiting for me to come back and take care of her. I turn away and press my forehead against the entertainment center. I cannot answer the door just yet. I give the others a guttural whisper. Hold on a moment. Once I calm down, I walk to the door and let them in. Their faces are disappointed and angry. One look at my eyes and Mana softens. Cope just nods and brushes past. Blake bumps my shoulder and I move aside. I feel like an ass. This is too big, too important to mess around. I trudge into the sitting area where Anna has curled into a lounging position, and Ginger signs, Are you mad or stupid? We have to use caution, Mana signs. You could have gotten carried away and said something dumb, Blake adds. I'm sorry, I sign.
We're here to chaperone your guard duty and help out, Mana says out loud.
I suppose it's time to play this game.
Let's get it started, Blake says.
I have to watch the wino, I deadpan.
She can sit there and watch us, Blake says. We won't let her go nowhere, ain't that right, Cope?
That's right, Cope says with complete seriousness.
Blake bounces on the balls of his feet, getting into his role.
Pre-party, then summit, and then we're back in business.
Fucking right, Jin says.
She glares at Anna.
When I look over, Anna is holding an empty beer bottle. Bloody hell, she drank the rest of the one on the table. Damn it, she should be starting to sober up now.
Someone put on some music, Mana cheers.
Exactly, Anna says. I've been trying to say that.
I seem to recall Anna having a much higher tolerance a year and a half ago when she'd worked on New Year's Eve, but then again that's when her father had been training her up. I pace my way up to the bedroom level overlooking the seating area, while the twins, Anna and Blake, begin to dance. Watching Anna dance isn't helping my frame of mind. Now that she's no longer falling down, she's carefree, lithe and sexy. I watch her like a hawk, so when she makes her way back over to the minibar, I'm ready. The others might not care if she has another, but I do. I march down there and take the bottle of Chardonnay from her hand as she's tipping it back. A bit spills down her chin and she swallows.
Hey, give that...
I press a hand over her mouth and look at her sternly. Her eyes blaze up at me. She is pushing all my buttons. I turn her over to Mana because I don't know what to do with half-drunk sexy girls other than shag them, and Anna keeps touching me, making me want to do just that. I hate watching everyone pretend they're living it up in Vegas while what we're really doing is sitting around waiting for this thing to happen. The moment that will define us. It's maddening. I temporarily lose Father, then find him again at the high-stakes table with that same woman. Nothing seems out of the ordinary. The twins take Anna into the bathroom to clean her up, and then I hear her getting sick. Cope and I look at each other. He shakes his head. I know, I shouldn't go in there. I can't show concern. When she starts to cry, my heart shatters and I ignore Cope's outstretched hand to stop me. I push past Blake and burst into the bathroom. The twins silently try to stop me as well, but I know what I'm doing. I'll be quiet. I have to comfort her. Anna is on her knees under the running water, sitting back on her heels in the shower stall, soaking wet in her underwear. Her hands are on the tiles. She looks up at me with the saddest, reddest eyes. I quickly unbutton my dress shirt and throw it to the sink, followed by my undershirt. Then I open the stall door and crouch behind her, taking her in my arms. She sinks back into me, shaking. We sit there for the next 20 minutes with my arms around her while her bloodstream clears. When she finally turns to look at me, her eyes are clear and I nod. I stand, dry my arms, and leave her to get ready. I hate this night. It's hard to imagine that things will look up from here. I can only imagine all the ways they can get worse. Chapter 39. It's time. We are the lions, free of the Colosseums. We're the beginning of the end. Young Volcanoes by Fallout Boy. I knew things would get worse. Whispered voices down the hall catch my attention, European accents. I hear the name Marek, and I listen intently. It's a language I don't understand, but the man speaking sounds urgent. He slips into English at the end. Find it. Footsteps head down the hall our direction. It's Marek, and I know what he's after. I run to my duffel bag and yank out Anna's bag from within, shoving it toward her. Here's your bag, get ready. She stares at me like I've gone crazy. I sign, hide the hilt, the son of Shax is coming. She pales and opens the bag. We all watch, tense, as she pulls out a sack of wrapped sweets, looks around the room frantically, and then shoves the sack into the rubbish bin. The hilt has travelled the world, hidden in this fashion, with no notice, undetected by man-made machines. But something tells me the son of theft will be harder to fool. Moments later, he's at the door with a whisperer following him in. Marek is matter-of-fact, completely at ease. It's almost eerie the way Marek seems to know exactly what he's looking for, the bag of taffies. He fishes it from the bin and opens it, removing the hilt. He turns to me. She had it all along. Don't you know never to trust a pretty face? His eyes scan me from top to bottom. I'm getting a sense from this guy that I can't place. It's nothing to do with the sensual way he takes me in. It's in the way his eyes seem to be trying to communicate something more. I am rigid from the fact that he's taking the sword of righteousness on his father's orders, but something in his gaze tells me not to fight it. When Marek and the Whisperer leave, Shax gives him instructions. Dispose of it. Bury it in the desert if you must. We've lost our solitary weapon, and it's almost time to leave for the summit. Panic flares in my chest and then oddly subsides. From the look on Anna's face, she's got enough anxiety for the both of us. It's not until an hour later, as Marek is checking us over at the door to the nightclub, that I figure out what's strange about him. He gives off no evil vibes, no malicious intent. I don't get the feeling from him that I get with the Dukes and Sons of Thammers and other likely suspects. Marek takes his time patting me down. When the metal detector blares at my boots and he checks them over with care, I'm not nervous. He wears a malevolent expression, but I'm the king of masks, and his feels false. Despite appearances, I have the feeling Marek is an ally. I think he knew how the hilt was hidden because Belial got a hold of him. When he glances up at me from where he's crouched at my feet, we share the smallest of inconspicuous grins. He knows there are compartments in the underside of my boots, but he doesn't open them. He merely stands and nods for me to move along. I don't linger. I want to tell Anna my suspicions to ease her mind, but it's not safe. As we enter the club, I bloody hope I'm right about Marek. I hope the son of theft has the hilt up his sleeve, ready to play. I keep myself consistently buzzed with a constant stream of alcohol. I have to keep the bonds between me and Anna hidden from Astaroth. I wish I could stay sober, but I must remain on that cusp of fuzziness. As promised, Father shows to walk Anna into the summit, ready to take full credit for her capture. He looks her over with a sneer, and I know what he's thinking. She looks the part. A badass mercenary in black leather with heeled boots and bright blonde hair flowing wildly. Her eyes are dark and her lips are red. She doesn't back down from his stare. Father turns to me with an abrasive glare. This isn't exactly what I had in mind when I said to get her different clothes. I don't respond. He grabs her arm and yanks her toward the VIP room where the summit will take place. Anna turns her head to capture my gaze over her shoulder. She's afraid but pushing forward. My brave girl. Anyone else, including me, would have tried to run from this fate. I'm here, I tell her with my eyes. I'm not going anywhere. Father struts into the darkened lounge, shooting a haughty look at the other Dukes, and shoves Anna away. Go sit down until we're ready to deal with you. I want to grab him by the thick neck and deal with him right now. I feel Mana scratch me gently on the back to calm me, and we all move forward, following Anna to the long black couches along the wall. Fake stars twinkle down on us from the black ceiling. Other Nephilim from around the world filter in and sit along the walls with us. I search the room for exits. Aside from where we entered, there seems to be a door on the side wall that blends in with all the black. It has no exit sign. The club is underground, so that door could lead to a cellar or closet. I wish I could check for certain. When Astaroth arrives, Mana inconspicuously leans forward and glances between me and Anna, checking to see if the bond will be visible to her father. She gives a satisfied nod to say we're okay, and I exhale. I'm more nervous than I've ever been, but it's different than the last summit. We still don't have a plan. We've no clue how to take down all of these Dukes and spirits. Anna keeps talking about having faith, how this battle is bigger than just her, bigger than any of us. But I just want her to live. And yes, I want the demons gone for good. I haven't let myself imagine what life will be like without them. But as I watch the 11 of them mingling, all present except Belial, the lot of them unconcerned and unbothered by the hell they've put everyone through, I want them gone so badly it burns like acid in my blood. I want them to pay. I sit very still, as do the other Neph. We learned early on not to fidget, not to draw attention or show weakness or disrespect. Anna starts to nibble on her nail, and I nudge her leg with mine. She drops her hand to her lap. Moments later, Duke Rahab fills the open spot in the center of the room. All attention is on him as he speaks in a French accent, malice lacing each word. I never believed this summit would be called, but alas, the great prophecy is upon us. He motions to Father. I tense as Father strides straight to Anna, yanking her to her feet. My lungs constrict, watching him pull her to the middle of the room. I slide to the edge of my seat. Her badge holds the white of innocence, Rahab spits. First, the angels intervened to keep her alive. And then her father goes missing when we attempt to question him. But once we take out his offspring,
we will find Belial, and he will be dealt with.
How can this be, Brother Rahab?
Asks Blake's dad, Malcolm. Blake stares at his father in his new young body. He looks like a Chinese movie star, and he's modelled his hair to look just like Blake's.
The prophecy was a myth.
Rahab grins wickedly.
We have reason to believe that 18 years ago, a guardian angel broke ranks and possessed her human to be with a duke. Some of you might recall the angel Mariantha and her touching bond with Belial.
The traitor!
Bellows Xenia's father, Duke Sinelian. His eyes burn red and he bashes a fist against the table. Other dukes follow suit, shouting their disgust.
I am not sold on this so-called prophecy,
calls the smooth voice of Duke Alossa, Cope's father.
How do we know it's true? What proof do we have?
The dukes are so accustomed to being lied to from every angle that they break into an argument about the prophecy's validity. I'm quite pleased about this development, as watching them squabble among themselves makes me feel that our ranks of Nef are stronger. Plus, it gives me a chance to discreetly bend my knee up and reach down, prying my knife from the sole of my boot. And then, slowly, I grab the other, sliding them both into my pockets. The only person in the whole room who subtly glances at me is Marek, from his station at the door. His cheeks tighten as if he's holding back a grin, and that seals my earlier wonderings. He's golden. The dukes are raising their voices now over confusion about the prophecy. Rahab's version completely leaves out the pivotal bit about the demons being given a chance at redemption. He thinks the prophecy is only about banishing them from Earth back to hell. Anna watches them intently, her forehead pinched. The first true wave of terror hits me when I hear her speak. Her voice reaches above them all.
You're all being given a second chance at heaven.
Rahab's hand flies back and he hits her so hard she falls to the floor. I'm on my feet, but I'm not alone. Our entire row has stood.
What are we waiting for?
Duke Thamus yells.
Let's kill her!
If he goes near her, he will be the first to see the edge of my knife this night. I watch him carefully for any sign that he'll pull a weapon, but he is shushed by the other dukes who want to find out what Anna's talking about. Now they're fighting over whether or not to let her talk and whether or not to believe her. They finally decide to let Anna state the prophecy in its entirety, and Jezebet, the Duke of Lies, confirms that Anna's telling the truth. But none of this is working. They're too thick to see this is a good thing for them. The dukes hate hell, but they love Earth. Here, they are gods. Why would they want to return to heaven where everyone is equal? They want to kill Anna purely for suggesting it. Father yanks Anna by the hair and grabs her, putting an arm around her throat. I move forward quickly, but Ginger grabs my back pocket to hold me in check. I push her hand away and stare at Anna. They're scaring her to death. I can't bloody stand here much longer. Duke Thamaz is practically drooling, his eyes bright red.
Enough games! I want blood!
I palm my knife in my pocket. If it's blood he wants, I'll give him his own. I search the walls and ceiling desperately for that bright light, thinking now would be a brilliant time for the angels to show, but there are only demons and Nef. My father chuckles and I see that how he holds Anna against himself, eyes bright with hunger for his prey.
We will savor her. I won't even have her first. She's my little gift to you, brothers. Just be careful not to kill her yet because she needs to suffer in every possible way. Heaven is watching! Let's give him a show!
I can hardly breathe as the dukes move toward her, their eyes glowing red. Mammon, Thamaz, and Sinelian, dukes of greed, murder, and hatred. My eyes dart across the walls. Where are the bloody angels? Anna struggles against Father as he laughs darkly, getting his kicks off her fear, feeding off the rabid look in the other's eyes. I can't take it. Father! I call.
Not now!
He doesn't even turn. Mammon, the bastard who killed his own son, Flynn, is mere feet away from Anna, and he's unbuckling his pants. I glance at Cope, his eyes severe, and he gives me a nod. I zone in on Mammon as he licks his lips lewdly and reaches for Anna. Before I can blink again, my knife is out, opened, and flying directly toward its target. It embeds deep in his eye. only the handle showing. My God. I hold my breath. He staggers back, then to the side as he tries to right himself, and ultimately falls to his knees. His spirit starts wrenching itself out before the body is dead, frantically fighting to release itself as if it's on fire. I pull out my second knife and snap it open. All eyes are on Mammon, in horror and confusion. Father turns abruptly, dragging Anna sideways. His face is contorted, livid, and he sprays spittle when he snarls at me. What have you done? Just a bit of holy water on the blade, I tell him. Mammon's body dies with a thunk on the floor, and his spirit writhes in midair in agony. You, Father whispers. He advances on me, pulling Anna, and my stomach twists. I have publicly shamed him in the worst possible way, and if something doesn't happen soon, it could get very ugly. I trusted you! I nearly laugh. No, you didn't! Father gapes. Neff and Dukes alike gasp at my back talk. I have to be careful here. I need to get Anna away from him, and I only have one knife left. He's pulled her body in front of his, practically crouching behind her. You filthy, weak idiot, Father shouts. You have more potential than all my past sons combined. How could you let yourself be charmed like a dog by a Neff girl? You're a failure. You're a failure. Nothing I ever did was good enough. Kill him, Rahab demands. Nobody moves. Adrenaline beats through me as I stare around at the room, glad to have the attention off Anna. I weave the blade through my fingers, hoping they will forget about her and let her go while they're focused on me. I wait for them to advance, but they simply stare at me with red eyes, quickened breaths, and ferocious faces. I've pissed off the lot of them, except perhaps Jezebet, the one female duke. She looks rather amused. And Alossa is stoic and unmoved, very much like Capano, his son. Brother Farzath, Astaroth begins. I know what he's going to say, and I steel myself. I'm afraid this is more dire than we thought. Your son and the traitor's daughter are quite in love. I like the sound of that. It's the worst possible kick in the balls I can give Father, who looks as if he might vomit. You jest, he snarls. Not in the least, Astaroth says. And they've acted on it. They're married. The room erupts in loud gasps and sounds of outrage. Our Nephilim revolt has begun. The sons of Thammuz are next to disobey their father, although it's under the influence of Anna. She telepathically sends them the order, even as she's being gripped from behind by my father. She rarely uses her unique power of influence unless it's to stop an evil act such as this. Much to their own confusion, the sons of Thammuz put down their guns and won't shoot us. The twins are next, refusing to move away from my side when Astaroth orders. The dukes are seething at the audacity of the Nephilim not to obey them.
Excuse me, Duke Rahab, calls Marek from the door he guards. I apologize for the interruption, but I believe Duke Belial approaches.
Belial enters in his wrapper body, sporting a pinstripe suit with a gorgeous Xania at his side, standing tall and strong. Her father, Senelian, lets out a growl of outrage.
Traitor! You were behind all of this! You stole my daughter!
Belial laughs at this notion. Everyone knows Senelian discarded his daughter.
We got a lot to talk about, Belial tells his fellow dukes. I know I'm not the only one in this room who knew after the fall we'd been used like a bunch of fools. Lucifer's the one who did us wrong. How dare you, Rahab bellows.
Senelian reaches for his gun, but Belial points a finger straight at me.
You better rethink that, my man. You see my son-in-law over there? He got damn good aim with that knife, as y'all have seen.
I hold my shiny blade out for them to see. Eyes glow red all around me. Belial challenges the other dukes to consider returning to heaven, and they argue fiercely among themselves. I watch Father carefully, waiting for the moment I can extract Anna from his grip He's loosening his hold as he joins the argument, and has got her only by the wrist now. I'm about to rush the centre of the room to make my move, when something incredible happens. The Nef Marek brilliantly pulls something from under the back of his shirt and tosses it to Anna, who snatches it from the air. Father leaps away when he realizes what it is, and I run to Anna's side as the blade brilliantly bursts to life in her hands. She wields the sword, bathing the room in its celestial glow. It's absolutely beautiful, and so is she, my warrior. Screams and shouts erupt as the Dukes and Whisperers knock into each other, clamoring to distance themselves from the Sword of Righteousness. Belial, Marek, Blake, the twins, Zania, Capano, and his brothers all join me as we stand behind Anna. The Dukes slink back, looking as if they might piss themselves, and the spirits overhead hiss and stir. I'm still expecting, hoping, the angels will come at any moment. How will Anna get rid of the demons on her own? The room holds more than 100 Nef, but I'm certain not all of them will want to fight. Some are too old or too young. Some of them are loyal to their fathers and will fight against us. I bloody hate it that I cannot figure out a strategy. It's beyond me. Anxiousness is threatening to overtake me when something horrendous happens. It's Patty. They bring her in through the hidden door I'd noticed. They captured poor Patty and dragged her here to torture her in front of Anna. I have witnessed my share of heartbreaking events, but none has affected me like this. When Anna sees her earthly mum, her wail is agonizing to my ears. Patty's love blooms out from her body when she hears Anna's voice, and then she's surrounded by an aura of peace. I've always admired this woman from the day I met her, long before I knew she'd become my mother-in-law. She's the only woman who's ever loved me in a purely motherly way. My eyes burn. She's been like a mum to me. To all of us. Anna holds the sword in both hands, moving her weight from foot to foot. Tears stream down her face and the twins are silently crying. I am dizzy with the horror of it all. I hold my knife, keeping my wrist loose. Bammers cuts Patty across the face, but Belial grabs my arm before I can throw my knife. His eyes are pained as he shakes his head. How can he stand there and let this happen? I know it's some bloody test of faith for Anna, but this is wrong. I could ignore Belial and kill Thammers now. I can see Anna wants to leap forward, wants to run to her, but if she gets herself in the thick of the Dukes, she will be overpowered, even if she manages to take out one or two before she goes down. I understand all of this, but I hate it. 2 seconds ago we were gaining an upper hand, and now it's like we're powerless all over again. They've got one of ours for leverage. One of our most beloved. When Thammers attacks Patty, stabbing her, I grasp Anna to hold her up. The shrieks from Anna and the twins are the sounds of night terrors. Everything in me feels heavy and hollow. Bastards, I say through gritted teeth. Thammers raises the knife again, but I cannot let it happen. This must stop now. Anna mirrors my thoughts. Stop him, Kai. With pleasure. Thammers is turned away from us, facing Patty with his arm raised, and I hurl my knife into the back of his thick neck. When his feral spirit heaves itself from its body and comes racing jaggedly toward us, Anna slashes him through. We watch as his spirit evaporates, disappears. The Dukes back away, watching another from their ranks obliterated seems to stun them. I can see their minds working, though they make no move to fight. Belial scoops up Patty and brings her to Anna. It's not good. She's only human. She can't heal from this kind of injury on her own. Patty's eyes move to each of our faces in turn to say her goodbyes. When her eyes meet mine, she tries to smile and I'm slammed with angry sorrow. Anna is crying, still clenching the hilt in her hands, and I hold her by the shoulder, wishing I could fix this. I'm not scared, honey, Patty says to Anna. I'm ready. We watch helpless as she takes her last breath and her spirit rises gracefully from her body, smaller than an angel and without wings, but beautiful in its own way. Her guardian angel bows its head over her, gathering her close. It lifts her straight up and out of sight, taking her home. Anna grits her teeth, her face wet, and her eyes filled with the shock of loss. Pandemonium arises as Neff, fed up from years of abuse, stampede toward the Dukes. Other Neff, who are loyal to their fathers, try to shield them, and the fighting begins.
Work to disarm them! Belial shouts.
Belial is right. Several of the Dukes have guns. They have to be dealt with first. I stand in front of Anna with Belial at my side, blocking her from any stray bullets, as our allies bear down on the Dukes with weapons. Fighting back, rebelling, is far more exhilarating than I ever expected. The fear is still there, but when it blends with all the other feelings, the need for revenge, for freedom, it adds to the ripe recklessness within. I grasp this feeling, holding tight. To the left, Duke Coble tries to aim at Anna, leaning to the side. I instinctually lean as well, shielding her. Get Coble, I yell and point at him. Marna kicks him in the leg just before she's yanked back by the hair by the small but substantial Neff Katarina. Coble jerks when he's kicked, shooting Duke Jezebet in the arm. She screams. Coble aims again, but Carpano bursts through the crowd and takes him down. They wrestle on the ground. An enemy Neff runs past me toward them, but I snatch him by the back of his shirt, spinning him and smashing my fist into his nose with a crunch. Then I shove him aside to deal with his bleeding, and I shake out my hand. Blake dives for Coble's arm, wrenching the gun away and cracking Coble in the eye with the handle. I want to dive into the fight, but I refuse to leave Anna unguarded. Belial looks at me and nods his approval. We are her last line of defense. As spirits swoop down, trying to overpower Anna with their vile whispers, I cast furtive glances back to be sure she's okay. She is slashing the hell out of any who are stupid enough to get within arm's reach. Our allies work together to take down Dukes and enemy Neff. Marek retrieves my knife from Thamaz's dead body and corners one of the enemy Neff. I can only assume we're rounding up the Dukes in order to fulfill the prophecy, but as the battle rages on, I'm beginning to wonder when the hell that's ever going to happen. In the middle of the fighting, I see one of the sons of Thamaz crawling forward, grabbing for a small handgun that's been knocked to the ground. I shout to one of Capano's brothers, who's standing closest, and he rushes for the Neff, but is too late. The son of Thamaz has made it to his knees and shoots half a second before he's knocked down violently by Cope's brother. Xenia cries out as Capano curls in on himself, shot in the chest, and falls to the ground. Oh, fuck. No! Anna screams. She tries to run, but I grab her arm and yank her back behind me. Xenia is at Capano's side, trying to stop the bleeding with her hands. From the corner of my eye, I see someone rushing our other side and hear Belial yell. I turn just as Belial and Blake are grabbing Duke Sinelian's arms. He thrashes, pushing toward Anna, and Blake swipes his feet out from under him. Anna raises the sword and I get the hell out of the way. She stabs him straight through. His chest arches up, then there's a puff of smoke as his soul is extinguished. Good riddance, Duke of Hate. We look back over at Capano, who's now surrounded by Xenia, his brothers, and his father. He's so still. It makes something in my chest twist in agony.
It's not his time, Duke Alossa cries out.
My eyes are glued to the scene, as Alossa's spirit begins to rise from his skin, and his body slumps to the floor. Anna gasps, oh my gosh. Alossa in spirit form floats above Cope for a mysterious moment, and then sinks, disappearing into Cope's body. My mouth drops. My God, his father is possessing him. He's healing him, saving him. Xenia lets out a sob as Capano's body lurches. When his chest rises and falls in a pattern of regular breathing, his body heaves to dispense the invasive spirit. Alossa pulls himself from Cope's form and looks down at his son. A few people cheer. Xenia looks at his father's spirit with open gratitude. Cope blinks up at him. I've always known Duke Alossa loved Capano, but to see it burns my chest with longing. I seek out my father in the mass, and he is watching the interaction with loathing. He can make no move, though. Duke Jezebet, who turned out to be a longtime ally of Belial, stands behind him, pointing a knife at his back. Xenia kisses Cope's forehead, crying with joy, and I nod to myself, huffing out a breath of relief. Anna lets out a laugh. He's going to be okay. Nearly all of the remaining dukes and enemy Neff are disarmed and detained, but I'm not sure how long we can hold them. They're still struggling viciously and screaming their anger like savages.
It's time, Anna says.
Yes, I shout over my shoulder. Does she know what's to happen next? Does she sense that angels are coming? And then her voice turns sweet and reverent in the air behind me.
Father, let your will be done.
She's praying. That's not at all the tactic I was expecting, but each word sends a tingle down my spine. I'm not the only one who feels it. Others around us look up. Through the fighting, I see my father again. He's staring at Anna. For a moment, I imagine that the look of shock on his face means something different, like perhaps he's having an epiphany, and I feel a lightness of hope. And then his eyes burn red, and he opens his mouth with a war cry. All hope vanishes when I see the bloodlust in his eyes, his hatred of her and what she's trying to do. He backhands Jezebet, who drops the knife and grabs her bleeding nose. Father charges. I raise my arm to stop him, knife up. Belial rushes from the side and tackles him with a forearm to the throat. His head slams against the floor. Father is large in his new body, but Belial is massive and holds him down while I crouch at his side. He struggles against Belial, his face furious, and I shake my head. It's too late, Father. This is your opportunity to make amends. It would be stupid to harbour a grain of hope at this point, and yet I'm still disappointed in his response.
I will not grovel at his feet.
Belial shakes his head and mumbles,
You're gonna be groveling in hell, brother.
Father tries to spit at him, but it ends up on his own chin. I look up at Anna, nodding for her to continue. Her voice is clear. I pray forgiveness for the souls who once betrayed you and have reconciled. Return them to their rightful home, and let those spirits who still harbor hatred be returned to hell. The dark room begins to glow, as if nightlights have been switched on. Whispers circle and spin above us. Belial grins at me. It's working, I say to Anna. Keep going. Her eyes are closed and her face is luminescent. She stands with her feet apart, the sword still blazing in her hands, and says the magic words,
Banish all the demons from Earth.
I'm racked with a sudden bout of dizzying vertigo, but when I look around, I see I'm not alone. Everyone's eyes have gone round as they're staring at the floor. Blake's eyes lock with mine across the room. I skate my gaze to the twins, Cope and Z. What is happening? It feels like a bloody earthquake. Are we all going to be killed? Will we all be taken tonight? The fear that threatens to rise up is suddenly snuffed out by a glorious warmth that envelops me and sends an absolute hush over the room. Anna belts out the last of her prayer.
I ask with all my heart that the demon stains be washed from the souls of all Nephilim, both here, on Earth, and those who came before us. Please allow us a chance at redemption.
The ground cracks open with a shattering boom, throwing the room off balance. Anna stumbles and drops the sword. It rolls straight into the depths of the crack. I grab her and pull her aside as tables slide past and chairs fall over. I look toward the side door not 20 feet away. We have to make it there. The room stills again. One by one, the souls of the dukes are sucked from their bodies. One by one, the dark souls are siphoned into the crack, returning to hell for good. I watch with more sadness than I want to admit as Father's soul lifts and his hand reaches for me before it goes lifeless. And then his soul is spiraling away. Down, down, down. Gone. Now angels appear from above, a whole slew of them lighting up the room, and I want to say, bit late, aren't you? But then I have to smile because we handled it without them, with Anna leading the way. With the angels comes that warm feeling again. Belial closes his eyes and lifts his face. Something alive is in the room, something I can't see but I can feel. It's like the warm joy I get when I'm with Anna, and when I saw her mother, but even purer, even stronger. It's all-encompassing. It's a feeling of love. It is well, says a soothing whisper in my ear like the wind. My heart is beating too fast. I remember what I'd said that day at the Grand Canyon. We can talk peace when you get rid of the demons. Well, I'll be damned. I think I've just been humbled. Thank you, I whisper. I look over at Anna, who's watching in awe as the few redeemed demons' stains are lifted from their badges and their souls rise. Belial and Anna look at each other.
You did good, baby girl, he says.
He grasps Anna tightly and she all but disappears inside his large embrace. And then, like the others, his soul rises, leaving Big Rotty's body lying there. He smiles down on us, shining in the newness of his cleansed soul, white wings flapping. With a final grin, he shoots up and away. The angels ascend, leaving us, and I stare at Anna. Her eyes are aglow with joy. She's alive. She made it. We both did. I pull her to me and hold her tight. She laughs in my arms. And then something feels strange. My entire torso is heavy and overly hot. Then there's a pull, like a vacuum is on my sternum. I watch in shock as dark red smoke leaves my body where my badge is and wafts away. What the? I look at Anna as a fizzle of putrid yellow seeps from her badge, leaving it white as snow. She puts a hand over her chest, then looks at my badge and grins. I lift my eyes to the other Neff in the room, who are all staring around at each other's white badges. What does it mean? There are roughly 50 Neff left alive in the room. All of our allies are miraculously accounted for, though some are worse for wear, with bloodied limbs and torn clothing. The room is strewn with bodies and debris. It's quiet, as if we're all too afraid to ask. Is it over then? Truly? The floor abruptly shudders and tilts, knocking Anna into me, and a creak of metal cries out. This building is about to come down. We have to get out of here, I yell. Everyone in the room struggles to stand and run at once. Ginger falls, pulling at Mana, who twists her leg. I grab them both under the arms and pull them to their feet. Then Cope and I grab Xenia, who falls next. I grasp Anna's hand and keep her by my side as we hurdle toppled chairs and clumsily wade over rubble. I press Anna through the door before me, exhaling a huge breath when we make it up those basement stairs and away from the building into the dark night. We're all out, staring back at the shaking building as we run, helping to hold one another up. We made it. I can't believe it bloody happened, but the demons are gone and we made it. I squeeze Anna's hand and a laugh escapes me. Ginger flashes me an astonished smile and pulls Mana closer. Her other hand reaches for Blake's arm and he kisses her shoulder. I marvel at the firm warmth of Anna's hand in mine, and I keep staring down at her, black leather covered in dust. Her face is streaked with dried tears and dirt. We don't stop moving until we get to our hotel, which feels solid and sound. Together we stand staring out the glass window at Las Vegas, linked hand in hand. All around us people are running, terrified. And though we are dazed and overwhelmed and mourning those we've lost, we are no longer afraid. We are free. Chapter 40. Good. I believe now there's a reason why I'm here. It's to try to do good. It's to try to do better. Free now by sleeping with sirens. 6 years later. I'm sure everyone's curious about what it's like to be married to me. It's awesome, if I do say so myself. In many ways, we're just like other couples. She gently scolds me for leaving dirty dishes all over the house, and I have to sit through cheesy chick flicks. But it's so much more than that. Anna was there for me when I typed an anonymous letter to the FBI and Atlanta Police Department, detailing the work of Marissa, her location, and as many of her accomplices' names as I could remember. It was a risk, even anonymously, because if Marissa caught wind of the letter, she could have easily tried to find me, to kill me. I spent 7 months worrying, listening out, watching for her goons, and not letting Anna out of my sight. and then the news hit, causing an international media blitz. It was the largest bust the world had ever seen. It shed light on sexual slavery around the world. Anna stood behind me, squeezing my shoulders as we watched the news that night. Tears streamed down her face as Marissa was led away in handcuffs. Then Anna wrapped her arms around my neck and kissed my cheek, whispering, "I'm so proud of you." 6 weeks later, I held Anna as she cried against my chest when we lost Marna. Baby Anise was born healthy and thriving, but she would never know her mother. "She's in heaven," Anna said, wiping her eyes. "An angel came down and took her." I swallowed hard as I held Anna, both relieved and saddened. While some curses for our kind were lifted, others remained. We still feel the weight of our sinful Nephilim natures, but we're no longer condemned straight to hell when we die. Like other couples, Anna and I are a sounding board for each other on work issues and other problems. As a social worker, Anna is still trying to save the world, but she's held back by the system of rules and regulations. I comfort her when she cries about frustrating cases of child abuse, when it becomes too much for her to bear. As for my job, in Lascivious's fourth year of success, Raj went off the deep end and OD'd on a mix of drugs. An accidental death, but the band never came back after losing him. We went our separate ways, and I'm now working with Jay on the business end of the industry, making music and learning about producing. I do miss the rush of being on stage, but at least Anna doesn't have to deal with girls grabbing at me after events. Though it was a complete turn-on when she once grabbed a girl's arm backstage, saying, "Excuse me, but that is my husband you're trying to grope, and I suggest you keep your hands to yourself." She'd said it with southern charm, but I could see in her stance that my girl had been ready to throw down. I rewarded her well that night for saving me from the groper. And I suppose that's where we differ from other married couples. We spend a lot of time in the buff. It's not really fair to compare since we've been through so much together, seen so much in our lives. We don't have the same worries that other people do. But what can I say? Life is good. Every time I see Anna's little arse wiggling as she washes dishes, or see her bending over the tub to scrub a corner, I become more and more glad she refuses to hire a maid. I know, I'm swine. I am a master of the sneak attack from behind. I prowl as she's stirring or baking or rinsing, and then I pounce. I'm all over her and she's screaming, "Kai!" and trying to get back to doing whatever thing she's doing at that moment. But I'm quite persuasive. 1 year ago, as we lay together on the couch, she ran her fingers through that small patch of hair in the middle of my chest. A pang of old worry crept in. "Do you suppose I should get rid of that?" I asked. "Shave it off or laser it or something." She looked at me with confusion. "What? This hair? Why, I like it." She laid her head back on my arm, and I held her tighter. I am a lucky bastard. That's why I tried not to blanch when she hesitantly brought up the idea of adopting from Malawi. She puts up with a lot of shit from me, so I fought back my initial instinct to run screaming at the idea of a tiny person invading our content little bubble. A lot would change. No more walking about naked. No more shagging Anna anywhere and everywhere I pleased. No more playing the drums at night as loudly as I want. No more blasting music with colourful language. No more shagging Anna anywhere and everywhere. Oh wait, I said that. But it's worth repeating. I'm still a selfish bastard who doesn't care to share, especially where Anna is concerned. But I long ago learned that she doesn't belong to me. She allows me to hold her heart, but she's not fulfilled if she isn't sharing her love and kindness with as many people as possible. I know she misses Patty like mad. I do as well, so I can't imagine how it is for her. I know Anna is craving a family, and the more she talks about it, the more I start to vaguely see her vision as something nice. You can teach him drums and music and dress him in tiny rocker clothes and show him how to skateboard and... Then she mentions a set of brothers instead of just one child, and I think she's trying to kill me. She claps her hands, and her face is so filled with joy that I throw my hands up and sigh. Why the hell not? Let's do it. And that's how we ended up here, in Malawi, at the orphanage owned by Cope and Xenia. They're looking well. I suppose if caring for loads of children hasn't aged them terribly, Anna and I can handle just two.
I'm far more nervous than I care to admit, so I hold Anna's hand tightly. She smiles up at me when Cope goes to get them. Her eyes are already damp with emotion, and I think to myself that these two boys are the luckiest lads in the world to be getting Anna as a mum. Cope comes back in with a toddler and a baby, one on each hip, and they're bloody cute as can be. A burst of excitement I hadn't planned to feel flares through me, followed by even more nervousness. These are my boys. My sons. My God, I can't believe this is happening. Anna goes to the baby, who takes to her straight away, and I've never seen my woman smile so big. She's radiant. The baby flaps his arms, making bubbling sounds and grabbing her hair. "Hi, Onani," she says to him, laughing. I can't help but smile. I look down now at the older boy, Mandala, and he's clearly going to be a tougher sell. He looks a bit untrusting, and I can understand that feeling. But I've come prepared. I squat next to him and pull out a toy car, a red hot rod. I hold it out, not getting too close. He takes a tentative step toward me. "It's yours, mate," I say, stretching my arm closer to him. "I brought it just for you." I keep my arm extended until he slowly walks forward and takes it from me. He stares at my eyes, as if expecting me to take it back or yell. I nod and smile. I crouch and urge him to roll it on the ground. I even make some awesome engine sound effects, and he suddenly looks up at me and smiles. I have to swallow back a bout of mounting emotion. I want this boy to trust me. I want him to never fear me. I want to do right by him. It's funny how even yesterday I was still feeling wary, though I'd never tell Anna that. She was so thrilled, and I felt like a gobshite for not being excited. I couldn't see how I'd have room in my heart to care for two children, two strangers, the way they would need me to. I'd hoped over time I'd get the hang of it, but it turns out some things truly do come naturally. Like loving a child. My heart expands and makes room for them without any effort from my mind. And once they're in, they're there to stay. They're mine to care for, mine to provide for and support. We remain at the orphanage for hours, getting to know the boys' personalities and letting them become accustomed to us. I can already imagine them at our home just outside of LA. We have a small yard. There's a park down the street. I can see them there. I can see me there with them. The room opens and other children filter in to look us over with curiosity. They all seem to be fascinated with Anna's bright hair and drawn to her lovely smile. Can't blame them. The children are easy to entertain. They mostly just want attention, so I give it to them and find that they make me laugh. "Kai," I hear Anna say, "I think someone wants to meet you." I look up to where I sense that I'm being watched. A little girl, maybe 4 years old, stands next to the door, staring so hard at my face that I go still. Her aura is powerful, much fuller than most children's. Her negative emotions run deep, and I wonder what she's been through. Orange excitement zaps like tiny lightning bolts through the grey cloudiness as she watches me. But the strangest part is the top of her aura. It goes fuzzy, then pink, like cotton candy. She's staring straight at me. I'm feeling love. I think she must be confused, but that stare of hers is potent, and I can't look away. "Hi there," I say to her. "What's your name?" She points at me and says, "Bumbo." I look up at Xenia, whose forehead scrunches. Both she and Cope crouch on either side of the girl, but she pays them no attention. Her eyes are on me. "Her name is Alila," Xenia tells me. "Alila. It means she weeps."
"Alila," Kapano says to the girl. "Ziku yenda buanji."
"She speaks Tichua," Xenia whispers. Anna scoots closer to me. Alila's guardian angel dips low to whisper, and the darkness in her aura lightens. It is highly unusual for most adults, much less a child, to be this open to the spirit. The girl walks toward me, and I hold my breath. curious and a bit nervous. I remain very still as she reaches out to touch my face with dry, dusty hands. Her face is close to mine, and it's like she can't get deep enough into my eyes. She keeps a small, cool hand on my cheek and climbs confidently into my lap, sitting. She speaks clearly up at me again. Bumbo. Something is happening here. I don't know what, but it's making me dizzy with anxiousness. I can't look away from Alila, but in my peripheral vision I see Cope and Xenia staring at each other. What does Bambo mean? Anna whispers. Capano clears his throat, pauses.
It's a word for father.
Holy mother. If I wasn't sitting down already, I might pass out. Father? But why on earth? I look down at the delicate girl who is now patting at my shirt, checking me over. Xenia begins to sign. She came to us from another orphanage that shut down because of sexual abuse. My gut sours and tightens. I look at Anna, whose face is horrified. My teeth grind as I think about this poor little girl. She's so small. She's been a victim of heinous acts in a world I'm all too familiar with. It's no wonder her aura is so dark. I want to find and kill whoever touched her. Capano speaks to Alila in Chichua, and Xenia interprets. He tells her Kaiden is his friend and wants to know why she calls him father. I hold my breath as Alila leans against me with complete comfort and familiarity, her head turned toward Capano as she answers him. Again Cope clears his throat.
She says, in my dream he was my father.
I can't breathe, I... This girl dreamed of me. It had to be an angel, or else she has a very special gift that few are given and few are privy to. My eyes dart to Anna and she seems to be holding her breath, eyes wide with wonder. This is huge. This cannot be brushed aside or laughed off or ignored. I try to imagine leaving this orphanage with Anani and Mandala, leaving this little girl behind. A fierce, urgent, possessive urge rises up in me like a windstorm, and I wrap my arms around her. I will not leave her. I will never let anyone hurt her again. She's my daughter. A gift. A blessing. Something I never thought I wanted. But now I'd fight anyone who tried to take her from me. My heart stretches wide to let her in, and I'm full with the rightness of it. Alila snuggles closer, as if her home is right there in my lap. When the burn begins behind my eyes and the moisture builds, I'm too overcome to bother stopping it. The tears are hot on my cheeks, and I wipe them away. I don't feel weak. In fact, I've never felt stronger. Anna takes my hand and I hold tight to her. Anani and Mandala play at our feet, the baby patting Alila's bare foot. My wife. My sons, my daughter. I will do right by them. I swear it. I am my father's son, but he does not live in me. This, right here, is who I choose to be. I imagine the Maker, Belial, Patty, Mariantha, and all the angels smiling down on me saying, "It is good." And I have to agree. It's damn good.
This is Christian Coulson. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Sweet Temptation by Wendy Higgins. This program was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2015 by Wendy Higgins. Production copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.